Welcome, everyone. My name is Rick Spencer, Vice President with HaneyBiz. I'd like to welcome all of our attendees today to our second webinar in the series on PPP forgiveness. This series is brought to you by HaneyBiz in partnership with Suncrest Bank. As we go through our webinar today, I'd like to remind all the attendees of a few key details. We are recording this, so you will be able to go to HaneyBiz.com, and under our resources tab, we have a PPP forgiveness page. You can find our first webinar recorded. You can find this webinar after we conclude today, as well as several of our other resources and tools. Today for our webinar, you'll be able to see and hear from our panelists. We would encourage you to submit questions. There is a Q&A icon on the bottom of your Zoom screen. By using that icon, you can write the questions. We'll be having a Q&A period at the end of the session. And if for some reason we can't get to your question live during today's webinar, we'll be sure to follow up with you individually. You can also find on the PPP forgiveness page that I mentioned on HaneyBiz.com a list of previously asked questions in our FAQ section. With that, I'd like to thank and welcome Suncrest Bank. We've been partnering with Suncrest for throughout this process and been able to get to know the team really well, and have been incredibly impressed with their leadership and with their responsiveness to this PPP program. So I'd like to personally welcome Steve Jones, COO of Suncrest Bank. Steve, can you tell us a little bit about how your team is managing this PPP process for your customers?
Yeah, Rick, thanks. I'd like to extend my welcome on behalf of Suncrest Bank to all of our participants. So we have definitely seen a slowdown in the number of applications being received, and I think we see that across country. Our team has been working nearly around the clock now for about 6 weeks, 7 weeks now on the program. And as we start to see some of the forgiveness pieces, we're really focused on that now with what we're doing with HaneyBiz. We're also looking at some solutions, some automated solutions that are going to take what you see today during the presentation and help you automate the process all the way to the forgiveness. So there's more on that to come. That'll come from Suncrest Bank to all of our customers that we have participated jointly with in getting those PPP funds to you. One thing I'll say is the community support, the businesses that we're supporting out in the community, and our customers and our staff, how they're working together in this, really gives me a lot of hope for the future in our communities. You all are supporting our businesses, our communities, and we're very encouraged by that. So you'll see some of that to come in some of our social media sites. So out on LinkedIn and Facebook, if you're following Suncrest Bank, I'd encourage you to, and you'll see some of that coming up soon. Some great stories out there. So Rick, back to you and the team.
Thank you, Steve. I know from the last webinar, we learned how Suncrest was really born out of the last economic crisis. And so it's just great to partner with you and see you step up for the community at large with this effort. So thank you again to Suncrest. So now that we're finishing the welcome, I just want to cover the agenda quickly. We'll be going through the new guidance review from the SBA. We'll be walking you through how to complete the new application that has been released. So this is the PPP forgiveness application. And we'll also be talking about the information you need to complete that and some of the specifics on the forms needed. So we'll try to get as detailed as possible throughout this webinar. And again, not only will we be available for Q&A during this session, but the HaneyBiz team and specifically our group of accountants and CPAs have been working tirelessly to answer questions and support Suncrest customers and other community members with some of our support packages, which we'll talk about at the end. So we're here to help at HaneyBiz, and we hope to help as many as we can. So now I'd like to introduce the team and our panelists for today. First and foremost, we have Ian DeWert. Ian is a Vice President of Investments at HaneyBiz. Prior to HaneyBiz, Ian has significant experience in the hedge fund space, working for an international hedge fund out of San Francisco. After that, Ian was a co-founder and partner with a venture capital firm that was focused on renewable energy and green technologies. And Ian has been a startup CFO, as well as has continued to support startups in a board capacity. At HaneyBiz, he is overseeing our portfolio of investments. And so he has a keen eye to understand some of the challenges and the opportunities that organizations face during these times. So welcome, Ian. We also have Alyssa White. Alyssa is a director with our accounting team. She is a licensed CPA. She has other great designations like Pro Advisor Elite status with QuickBooks. And Alyssa has worked on a broad spectrum of companies, from the large companies that she supported while she was with a big four accounting firm, to the companies that she supports with HaneyBiz, which has been both startups to large multi-million dollar operations. And so, Alyssa, we are thrilled to have your expertise and contributions to this whole effort. So finally, myself, I'll be helping with moderation. And my responsibility at HaneyBiz is to help with community development and partnerships. And I look forward to supporting our attendees today. So with that said, Ian and Alyssa, can you take us through this very easy process of PPP forgiveness?
You got it.
We would be happy to.
Yes.
This is a fairly intimidating form that the SBA has provided for loan forgiveness. When you first look through it, it might seem a little scary. So what Alyssa and I are hoping to do today is, reduce some of the complexity and make it feel a little easier.
That's right.
And so where we're going to start, what's happened since the last time we had a webinar, since this program started, a lot of confusion out of the gate, a lot of things weren't clear. And what we were expecting was the SBA to come out with continued clarification, documents, answering questions. And they did some of that. And then on the date they advertised, they actually did produce the forgiveness application. And it turns out a lot of the questions we were asking are clarified in the application itself.
Yeah, that's right. So the application is great that we have it available now, and it has added some clarity to questions that we've had, which is great. However, there are still questions. We still have more questions than answers, and the SBA has stated that they will be bringing out more guidelines soon. We do not know what soon is, but today we're going to focus specifically on what we do know and this application. So what are some things that have been clarified since last time? Well, one of the things that's clear is how to align the payroll period to your spending period. And we'll go over that in detail when we look at the application. But one of the things that's nice is it gives you some flexibility on when you're counting your payroll costs. So that's a win. We're happy with that. One of the things they also clarified is for non-payroll type expenses, you can use the date incurred or spent. So that's nice. We don't think you have to do it both. So it's good that we have some more clarity about this. And then Ian, you had a good note about the third one.
Yeah, you may have seen in the headlines in the newspapers a lot of stories about companies receiving PPP loans and then returning them as it was deemed that the companies didn't need them. I think in order to remove some of the uncertainty in the market, the SBA made it very clear, if your loan is under $2 million, it's not going to be reviewed by the SBA to see if you needed it. It will be assumed if you took a loan under $2 million, you did need it, and they're not going to come after people to see if they really needed the loan.
Yeah, and that's a huge win because it caused a lot of people hesitation on trying to prove if they actually did were deemed, necessary to get these funds. So we're happy that this has brought out some clarification on that. The other things that are clear now is on the FTE side. When we spoke in our webinar 2 weeks ago, we were under the guidelines that 30-hour work week was what would be used for the FTE. This was out of Obama's healthcare initiative where they used the 30-hour work week, and we thought that they would continue that, but they clarified it is a 40-hour work week for determining FTEs. They've also offered a simplified method in determining what your FTE calculation is, so we'll go over that as well. But so that's much needed clarification on that. And then also some expansion on how seasonal employers can choose their comparative period. So you can see it on there. You can choose whatever consecutive 12-week period is between those dates. So those are some good wins. Things that are not clear yet, and even things that came out of this application that are causing us even more questions. One of them is what is included in these debt obligations. They're saying that, interest on debt obligations over real and personal property can be allowed. Well, personal property, that's interesting. What does that include? We're not sure yet. Is that equipment? Is that vehicles? We know mortgage interest yet, but what are the other things? Not sure. Looks like there could be some goodness coming out of that, but still waiting on clarification there. The other big one, what is transportation expense? We still do not know the answer. Is it fuel? Is it travel time that you're paying per diem wages to? Is it toll roads? Is it repairs on vehicles? We don't know. That's still a question. Some items in payroll are still unclear. Workers' comp, we were pretty sure last week that those were going to be included. The guidance now is suggesting maybe not, still not clear. And so that one, I'd err on the side of caution and assume that you cannot include that. There's still some question about when you pay your timing or when you pay your retirement benefit contributions, where the timing of that is, and some things about that. So we're going to have to wait to see some more on those items. And then the self-employed individual section is still one that, and I know you guys all have questions on it and we do have some answers, but that's still an area where they're gonna have to bring out some more clarity on that as well. And then lastly, the bank specifically, we don't know when banks are going to start, taking applications and how much time they have to go through the actual forgiveness process. That'll be deemed by the SBA. So we'll see when that comes out. So some good stuff, some stuff we're still waiting on.
And as we go through this webinar, please put all your questions into the Q&A section. Yes. We'll try to answer them at the end. Obviously with so much uncertainty out there, some of the questions we won't be able to answer, but we're collecting them, collecting your contact information. And as we have answers, we'll be back to you with clarity.
That's right.
So before we dive into the form itself, one of the things, this was on the last slide, that was clarified that we wanted to dive into a little bit deeper was the covered period. In the original, guidance, you were mandated to spend 100% of the funds within 8 weeks of receiving them. And a lot of people looked at the way they ran payroll and said, this doesn't make sense. This is a partial payroll period up front. And then like 8 weeks from now, we'll have another partial payroll period. So there is an alternative method to calculate the 8 weeks. And that is to take the first day of the first payroll period after you receive the funds and use 8 weeks from that date. Important to note that just covers the payroll portion of the loan. Your covered period.
That's right.
Your non-payroll expenses is still 8 weeks after you receive the funds. So you have to keep track of both. It's a little confusing, yeah. But this should provide some clarity with payroll.
That's right. Okay, so the application itself, I don't know if you guys have actually seen it or if you've printed it out. I have to print things like this out so I can see it, but it is 11 pages. And I think initially some people have looked at this and have been a bit overwhelmed, but we want to encourage you that the actual application itself is only 2 pages. And the first page, you know, is all the information regarding payroll and non-payroll costs. The second page is just certifications that you need to put on there. So we're really only talking about 1 page of data. The Schedule A and the Schedule A worksheet are supplementals to help get you the information necessary to put on the calculation form. So don't feel overwhelmed when you're looking at the big application. Remember, we're strictly just looking at a 2-page calculation form and some worksheets that are helping us fill it out.
Okay, so we're going to start going through the application itself. As we mentioned, we're working in reverse, which is a little counterintuitive, but it's actually the way the sheet flows. Starting at the back, the Schedule A worksheet, and this is on page 9 of the form. And where we start are table 1 and table 2. Two tables, the first for employees making under $100,000 and the second for employees making over $100,000. And it's important to note here that we are talking about non-owner employees, so not general partners and not owners.
Yeah, and a quick point on that too, Ian, we've gotten a lot of questions that have come in on this specific Schedule A worksheet about, well, if the owners aren't on here, does that mean that they're not included at all in this? No. This is just specifically for looking at employees. You will be included. It's on the actual Schedule A. So just know that this worksheet itself is just looking specifically at employees. It doesn't mean that owner's compensation is not included. So don't worry about that.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to walk through each of these boxes in detail. Before we do that, let's just take a moment and figure out what do we need to collect internally before we get into the number crunching. Payroll reports from your payroll provider or the payroll ledger reports from your accounting system, perhaps both. Those are going to be very handy as we go to fill out this employee by employee table. Some of the good news we're hearing from payroll providers is that they are proactively working to build reporting to help you fill out this worksheet. So
yeah,
if you have a payroll.
We know already ADP has the forms, Gusto has the forms, QuickBooks has the forms. So these are in there, and if they're not, they're working on them. Most large payroll providers are, so that should help streamline this a bit for you too.
Mm-hmm. If you have a lot of employees, this can be pretty granular calculation. So be sure to check with your payroll provider about the reports they have. Okay, so we're going to go box through box here and just clarify what the instructions are. So to start off, name, and just to repeat, this is not for contractors or anybody on a 1099. Those are not considered employees. If someone's an independent contractor, they need to get their own PPP loan. They do not count against your payroll expense. So straightforward, employee name. And then they list employee identifier. This is the last 4 digits of that employee's social security number. And then there is a box for cash compensation. So this one can get a little tricky. So we'll dive in here.
Yeah, the cash compensation piece. So this is strictly, as you can see in the little pop-out bubble there, but it's salaries, wages, tips, commission. This is not benefits. And so that does not mean benefits are not an eligible payroll cost. This means that benefits do not have to be included for determining if your employee is over the $100,000 threshold. So this is great clarification that come out. We've had people that have been like, I have an employee that makes $99,000. However, their benefit package puts them over $100,000. Does that mean I can't include those? You could absolutely include those as payroll costs. They are just not going to be included in for determining the $100,000 limitation. So that should calm some nerves on that piece.
Mm-hmm. We'll see where that benefit number flows in a little bit later when we get yep. into the Schedule A. Okay, so the next column is the average FTE. So we mentioned earlier, one of the things we got clarity on was how to calculate this. So there are two ways to calculate this now. So for a given employee, if they worked 40 hours or more in a given, on an average week, the number that goes here is one. For an employee who worked less than 40 hours, you can take their average hours worked per week. Let's say it's 30. 30 divided by 40, it's 0.75. We need to round that to the nearest tenth, so that employee would be a 0.8. And so you go through employee by employee and fill in that number. Now, you also have the option to use a simplified version. And the simplified version is you use a 1 for every full-time employee and a 0.5 for every employee who less than. Obviously, the simplified version is easier. It may affect, the results of this may affect your forgiveness eligibility. So keep in mind that if we get to a little later on in the form and see some of your loan because of the number worked, there's an alternate method, and it may make sense to run those numbers one more time with the alternate method. Let's see if you can get a better result.
Yeah, so just remember on this FTE piece, don't overcomplicate it. All it's trying to do is to get you what your headcount is, essentially. And so they're using this FTE methodology to do so. And you have two options to do it. You can either take each employee's individually divide it by 40, or you can use the simplified method. So don't be concerned about it. It's just they're giving you two options to do so.
And then in the last column, we have the salary reduction. This one is not as straightforward, and the method to fill in this box is going to be in the separate questions that are found in the section of the form called Instructions for the PPP Schedule A Worksheet. Before we get,
that's right.
We'll just take it table 2. The name and employee identifier are the same. The calculation of the average FTE is the same. And cash compensation, because we've exceeded $100,000 for all these employees, divide that by 52 to get a weekly compensation, multiply by 8 to get the compensation for the period, this box will always equal $15,385.
Yeah, so high level, you've got table 1, which is for employees less than $100,000, and then you've got table 2 for those that are over, and their cash compensation amount is always going to be limited to $100,000. And based on that calculation, you should have that amount in every single row. So just two different tables for two different types of employees, those under and those over the $100,000 threshold.
So going back, let me go back one slide. Now we're going to take a look at this column for salary hourly wage reduction. How do you figure that number out? Again, this is in the instructions. And this looks a little intimidating, but it's not so bad. We're going to show you how it's probably not as long as it looks. Before we get started, again, you'll need the payroll reports and or your payroll ledger report from your accounting system. Payroll provider may also be able to help with this section, separate report for a different time period. And as we dive in, step number 1, determine if pay was reduced by more than 25%. So for each employee, answer these questions and it will show up if that employee's salary was reduced by 25% or more. And if it wasn't, you're essentially done at this point. You don't have to go any further.
Right.
Back to table one, you'll just enter a zero.
That's right.
However,
and one of the things to remember,
go ahead.
I was just going to comment, Ian, one of the things to remember on this is, you know, you went through the worksheet so you could, you know, line item out all of your employees in those two different buckets. And so now you actually have to do some analysis on if you are meeting the certain threshold, other thresholds, right? And so one of them is, are you paying your employees now less than you should be? And if so, this is going to tell you what your, you know, reduction in forgiveness is. So that's all that this part is doing. It's now actually walking you through what that part is. And you have to do this for each employee, which is kind of a bummer. It could be a big time spend. And so, if you have the reports out of your payroll provider, that'll help save some time too.
Absolutely. So we'll move into step two for any employee whose salary was reduced by 25% or more. We go to step two. And this safe harbor question, this tripped us up at first, but we think the intent here is there may have been employees whose salary was reduced from that period of February, March, April, for periods, for reasons other than the coronavirus and any impacts that had to your business. Maybe there was just a pay cut or a reduction in hours. There's a safe harbor calculation that you do here. And if that was the case, it should fall out here. And just reading the instructions as I go.
The thing that they're trying to accomplish with this is that if you do have a reduction and it's for a legitimate reason outside of coronavirus, let's say if you have an employee who indeed had a performance issue and you had to let them go, they want to avoid you being penalized for a reduction in headcount for a reason like that. So going back to our webinar from 2 weeks ago, and if you weren't attending that, one of the main themes of that was documentation is going to be key. So for each employee that maybe is no longer a part of your team, or maybe was and doesn't want to come back, you as the employer need to make sure you have documentation for all of that. So if you had to let someone go for performance issues, make sure you have that documented. If you brought back employees because now you have the Paycheck Protection Program and they chose not to, you need to have that documented, that you offered them the job and that they chose to decline it. So just remember that, because this specific section of the safe harbor is about that piece. So just make sure you have the documentation to back it up.
And if we've gotten through step two and salary has been reduced and it doesn't fall under safe harbor, the rest of the calculation is going to get us to a dollar amount that we will fill in at the bottom of this section. And this dollar amount will sum up to an amount that won't be forgiven on your loan. And this number will aggregate and we'll fill it in on the next section as we get to Schedule A.
That's right.
So one section down, moving into Schedule A. Good news is most of the heavy lifting is done. Once you get through the worksheet, a lot of the heavy calculation is over.
Yeah, that's the best part of this whole thing. So, I mean, the Schedule A is just one page. Not a front and a back, it's one page. And you just did all of the work by going through the worksheet. So going through that, yes, that was a pain. I know we just went through what felt like 200 slides, but that is all in an effort to actually complete the Schedule A. And so the Schedule A is broken up into a couple pieces, which we'll go through, but it's payroll, it's non-payroll costs, and it's your full-time equivalency at the bottom, and that's it on this form. So remember, high level, this isn't too complex.
Yep, and lines 1 through 5 You can see line one equals box one, line two is box two, three, four, and five directly from that table you just filled out. So we're just moving the numbers over here, and the first five yep. lines are done already. Sorry, the graphic showing that. So these are the tables we filled out in the prior step. One, two, three, four, five, and this section is done. In the next section, we talk about non-cash compensation. So these yeah. are employee contributions to healthcare, to retirement plans, and the employer's contribution to state and local taxes. And these are all areas that I think we're receiving a lot of questions on.
Yeah, so one of the things that was questioned in a previous webinar was, well, what about federal taxes? So federal withholding is on an employee's salary that they withhold, you know, for their own taxes. And so that's just part of their growth. So there's not an issue there. You cannot include federal payroll taxes like FICA. You can do employer state and local taxes assessed on employee compensation, but not federal. So I think that tripped up a lot of people. So, you know, the difference between federal withholding and federal payroll taxes. So hopefully this provides clarification here. And also remember, these are non-cash compensation for the reason of when you're calculating the $100,000 threshold amount, these are not included. Doesn't mean that you don't get to count them as eligible payroll costs. You just don't need to count them for that $100,000 threshold test.
And on line nine, compensation to owners. So when we did the Schedule A worksheet, made sure to point out, don't include owners at that time because owner compensation is added to the form here. And
right. So
this isn't, so don't necessarily clear
stress for the. I was just going to mention, don't stress for the owners, because I think that that worksheet was where they were getting hung up because they weren't included there. But this is where you get included. So line nine is where you bring in that information.
Mm-hmm. And note here that if there is more than one owner, you essentially need to replicate that table and attach it separately. And then to wrap it up, fairly straightforward, line 10, we're just adding some of the lines above together. And at this point, total payroll costs are calculated.
Super easy, right? Most straightforward thing we've done all year. No, but hopefully these worksheets, you know, they're here to aid in helping you complete it. So it's pretty self, like it's easy to read going through it. So if you just walk through it step by step, you know, it should help you get through it pretty streamlined.
And in the next section, we'll calculate the FTE reduction. So this goes back to one of the concepts of this loan is that the PPP loan was intended to prevent employers from reducing the number of hours that their employees were working. And this is that test. So you'll see at the beginning, even before line 11, if you haven't reduced the number of paid hours between the beginning of the year and the end of the covered period, the end of that 8 weeks after you got your loan, you can simply check the box and skip this section by entering the number one on line 13.
And that's it. I mean, that's the Schedule A. So that line 13 is the very last line of it. That's the entire page. And so you, at this point in the process, have now determined all of the figures that you're going to need for the actual two-page calculation forgiveness form. So, and that's where we're going to go next. At that point, it's pretty much plug and play there too. So, mm-hmm.
And this lines 11, 12, and 13, essentially there'll be a ratio if full-time equivalent hours were reduced, you will take the hours in this period over the hours from the prior period, and that percentage will reduce some of your forgiveness.
Yep.
So with that, we'll get to the calculation form itself. And we wanted to start by, this seems kind of simple. The beginning of that section is your business legal name, and your DBA, your address, and some other identifying information, which seems pretty straightforward, but it's pretty important.
So straightforward. Yeah, this is super important. And you're like, why is it important what I put my name in? Okay, so here's the reason. So a business entity's legal name could be, you know, like for us, for example, our legal business name is Haney Business Ventures, comma, Inc., period, right? And so you may have a similar name like that. And when you filled out your Paycheck Protection Program application, maybe you forgot the period at the end of Inc. Maybe you forgot the comma. So if you forgot them there, you better match it here to the original application, not to your correct legal business name. Why? Well, the SBA's ETRAN system that is processing these applications will not be able to attach your forgiveness application to your original application if the names don't match. And so I know this seems like so straightforward, but we don't want anyone to not get this forgiveness because they like don't have the name matching. So word to the wise, double check your original application to make sure that you're matching the name exactly.
Yeah, and that goes for the rest of the information on this part of the form as well. Try to get it matched to the character just so it doesn't cause technical issues as it goes through the SBA system. Okay, so this is the beginning of the calculation form. This information is also pretty straightforward. We'll just go through quickly line by line and explain what's going on with each one just to avoid any confusion. So the first two numbers are both loan numbers. But there's a loan number that comes from the SBA itself. And then there is a loan number that comes from the bank. Just important to make sure you get the right number on the right part of the form. PPP loan amount, very straightforward. How much money were you loaned? And the PPP loan disbursement date, there's definitely a little room for interpretation on what the date means. As we are interpreting it, it is the date the cash hit your bank account. And there may be 1 day difference there. You may have been approved on a Tuesday and the cash hits on a Wednesday. If the cash hit your account on the Wednesday, that is the date, again, as we're interpreting it, that is the disbursement date.
That's right.
The next two lines are about the number of employees. One at the time the loan was applied for, and the second, the time when the forgiveness is applied for. Again, the intention of the PPP loan is to keep employers at keeping their headcount stable. So testing here to make sure that your headcount is the same or if it has dropped in anticipation of a reduction in forgiveness.
That's right.
Next line is about
the next
EID.
Section.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the advanced section. So I know this has tripped up a lot of people too. So if you remember, as I know most of you do, you know, there was a whole, you know, there was the disaster loan option that people could go after also, in addition to the Paycheck Protection Program, which is now currently closed to all other than those in the agricultural space. There was an advance option. If you applied for the disaster loan and chose to take the advance, which was up to $10,000, that advance can be forgiven in full. Well, if you take the Paycheck Protection Program, they're not allowing you to get a double benefit. So if you received the advance and you don't have to pay it back, you're going to have to reduce your forgiveness amount by it. And so you know, a lot of people are bummed about that, but they're trying to make it so that no one gets a double benefit. So that's why they're asking for it right there. So they know off the bat that you're going to have to reduce your forgiveness by that amount.
And on the next three lines, we're dealing with the payroll schedule. And if you are checking the weekly box or the biweekly box, there is a good chance that the alternative payroll covered period, which is two lines down, will make more sense to you as you're figuring out which 8-week period applies to payroll. It's just going to be easier to figure out the number if you can match your payroll records to the date the payroll was actually run.
That's right.
And the last part of this section is the $2 million test. So this again is if your loan is less than $2 million, the SBA will not challenge the necessity of the loan. They're saying you're free and clear. We know this is a hard time and we're not going to test to see if you actually needed the money.
That's right.
And we're getting into the home stretch now, the actual numbers for the calculation in itself. Payroll costs. We spent a lot of time up front calculating the payroll costs, and the good news is you just need to move that number over from the Schedule A.
Yeah. So all that work at the very front end of this webinar was to figure out the number to put in line one. So just remember that you've got the support in those worksheets to help you get that number. And then you can, you know, have confidence around the calculation on that. So.
And then as we get to lines 2, 3, and 4, as we said at the beginning of the webinar, there are some areas where we're still lacking a bit of clarity. Interest payments are a little more straightforward. Just note that these are not calculated in the alternate period. So even if you're doing the alternate period
right.
for your payroll, the covered period is still 8 weeks from the date you received funds. So 56 days of payments and no prepayments.
Right.
The same goes for business rent or lease payments. Again, it's the 56 days after you receive the loan, not tied to your payroll period if that's different. And the same goes for business utility expenses, which at this point includes the transportation expense.
Transportation term. Yeah, I mean, the way that they're reading it, like straight off of the application, it says business payments for a service for the distribution of electricity, gas, water, transportation, telephone, or internet access. So that, yeah, that's where the transportation falls, and we're still waiting to figure out what that means. And the important point with all of this too is remember that February 15th date. I've had a lot of people that have, even on the paying themselves rent side, like I'm an owner of a company and I've never, and I own the building and I've never paid rent. I'm going to start doing that now. Well, these relationships with your vendors all have had to been in place before February 15th. So they're making it so you can't craft a situation to help get a benefit out of this. So just remember that you can't start one of these relationships now and get forgiveness off of it.
And one last point, if there are any payments you made that you wouldn't want to include, and I'm not sure what the use case for that would be, but if you don't want to disclose them, you aren't required to disclose any of these payments.
Right.
Generally,
I think the point of what they're trying to make there is, don't overcomplicate it. Like if you spent 100% of your PPP funds on payroll, don't worry about the rest of this because it's just muddying the waters. If you spent $100,000 on payroll costs, you're only going to have line one filled out. So just keep it simple. Mm-hmm.
And in this part of the calculation form, we're going to make the adjustments. So if there were wage reductions or if there were reductions in the number of full-time workers or hours worked, they get put on the form here. Good news is they've already been calculated on Schedule A. You're just going to move them over.
That's right.
And on line 6, simply adding the lines 1 through 4 and subtracting line 5. Getting down to the end here, this section, what we're doing is determining the forgiveness amount 3 different ways, because right. line 11 will be the smallest of these 3 amounts. So you have line 9 is your PPP loan amount. If it turns out you've followed all the guidelines, lines 8 and 10 will be the same as your PPP loan amount, and the entire amount will be forgiven. If for some reason your payroll costs drop or your number of full-time employee equivalent hours dropped, these numbers will be smaller than your PPP loan amount, and ultimately that's the number, the amount of the forgiveness that you'll receive.
And we did it. So all of that, I mean, that's all just one page. I mean, so remember, like in high level, it's your business legal information. It's questions about your loan, like what's the number? Did you take out an advance? What's your payroll cycle? And then what's your payroll cost, your utilities, and then your eligible forgiveness. I mean, that's all that's on this page. And then the next page is just certification. So it's a lot of work to plug in specific line items on this, but it walks you through it pretty straightforward. So I know it seems like a lot, but working from the back all the way front is the way to do it, and it'll get you to the finish line here.
And at this point, I know there's a lot of questions in the Q&A. So Rick, if you can, I'm sure you've read through them all, and if you queued up, we're happy to try and answer some.
Yes, thank you everyone for your participation. There are way too many questions to respond to in our remaining time. But like we said, we are recording this and recording all the questions, so we'll be able to respond to you individually if we don't answer your question today. I also want to encourage you on an ongoing basis on our webpage at haneybiz.com resources PPP forgiveness, you can find a way to continue to submit questions. So we do want to help. So let me jump into some of these questions because I think there are some helpful ones for the broader audience. Can you clarify, maybe this is to Alyssa, what is alternative payroll?
Okay, so it's an alternative payroll covered period is the term that they're using. So it's just a second option for how you calculate the time frame that you utilize your payroll. So if you have, you know, point in time that you got the funds dispersed and 8 weeks from that date, that's the covered period of which you can use the payroll. However, you now have this alternative where that start date and end date can shift to the first date of your payroll cycle after the disbursement. And so then the last part of it is the first payroll cycle after the covered period. So all it's doing is shifting your 8-week cycle from date of disbursement and having it start date of your first pay cycle after disbursement. And so that's just to help better align your pay cycle with it. So you don't have to do these wonky calculations where you're bifurcating out payroll from like start date, if that's like midway through your payroll period. It's just allowing you to choose it to do it this way if that's easier for you.
Great, thank you. I think this is a broader kind of strategic question, but I feel like it would be helpful to the attendees. And the question is, what happens if you took too much money or used incorrect payroll numbers? Is there, steps for correction, or are there other steps that you would recommend?
It is a great question that actually had a conversation with someone who called in about this exact issue earlier. And I think there's two ways to look at it. One, we don't necessarily have guidance on that. If the loan you received was larger than it should have been, this could have been due to seasonality. The original application just said, what was your average payroll for 2019? many people have businesses where payroll certain months of the year is much larger than other months of the year. And now they are in an 8-week period where payroll is much lower. It's a really interesting question, because as you go through the forgiveness application, you wouldn't necessarily show that employee by employee compensation has been reduced. You wouldn't necessarily show that hours worked have been reduced, because the periods are very specific. So it's a little unclear. Important to remember, though, if the amount of money is more than you think you can pay out in payroll at the moment, it's not like there's a penalty for rolling that into a loan.
Right.
So the loan terms are very favorable. You get 6 months of deferred payment. At that point, you'll have 18 more months of monthly payment to repay the loan with a 1% interest rate. So it's a pretty good loan. If your loan size is too large, the worst case is you'll need to pay it back. If you did receive too much money on your PPP loan application, it's possible you could just return it immediately and pay down that loan balance.
Right.
So
great, thank you.
Much a strategy question. I don't know, Alyssa, if you wanted to add any other flavors.
No, I was going to add what you added at the end, that, you know, if you do think you have too much and you can't use it, there's nothing wrong with just going back to your bank and saying, I don't want this whole amount. So that's always an option too.
Great. You know, the original guidance talked about the EIDL advance. There was the $10,000 EIDL advance that would be included in the forgiveness amount. And so question about, has anything changed, or are there any reason why that EIDL advance would not be forgiven?
I think the answer is pretty clear at this moment that there's not an option where that would not happen. If you have the advance, it's pretty clear that your forgiveness is going to be reduced by the amount of the advance. I mean, they haven't really added even that much color to it. It's pretty cut and dry. So I would err on the side of caution and plan on those amounts not being forgiven.
Great. A couple more, I think, questions that will be relevant to the broad audience, and then again, we'll be responding individually to the rest. But when should you submit your application? Should you wait the full 8 weeks? What is your guidance on completion and submission?
That's a good question. So far, it's up to the banks at this point to kind of open the window to accept applications. And the guidance so far from the SBA is that they haven't put a time limit on it. And Steve, I see you just turned the camera back on. If you want to address this from the bank's perspective, that would be very helpful.
Yes, Steve.
Ian, thanks. You just mentioned that the SBA has not given us guidance on actually how we're supposed to transmit this form back to them also. So we don't have, even though we have information on forgiveness now, we don't have all the information. So there's still things to come. We have plenty of time. Spend this time collecting, gathering your information, filling out the forms. You may find that you need to go somewhere else to get some of the information, but this isn't unlike a strict time period on how the funds were running out and getting the loan. We have a much longer period for the forgiveness. So they're not asking at the end of your 8 weeks to immediately apply for forgiveness. So we've got time.
Great, thank you. I think this will be the last question we can address, and then again, we'll respond individually to the questions we couldn't get to during the webinar. But there has been a lot of discussion and documentation about the safe harbor threshold of $2 million. And so a question about, if your loan is under $2 million, the impression is it's not going to be heavily reviewed. Do you have any thoughts on that as far as review of forgiveness for loans under $2 million?
Yeah, I'll take that one again, Rick. And so what that is relating to is that the SBA is not going to question your need for the funds, not necessarily on the forgiveness side. So you still have to go through the process on forgiveness. You know, just like if this looks a little bit like a tax return, there's a reason, because some of the similar folks put this together that do our tax returns. And so so on the forgiveness side, you still have to, that information will still be reviewed. I think you need to err on the side of making sure that it's correct and complete. But that particular question had to do with if you're under $2 million, then you're not going to, they're not going to question your need for the loan.
Great. Thank you. So that's the conclusion of our Q&A period that we have available today. But again, for those we didn't answer in this session, we'll follow up with you individually. And you can also continue to submit your questions through our form on our PPP forgiveness page on HaneyBiz.com. I would like to thank again Suncrest, Steve, your leadership team, and everyone at Suncrest that are supporting Suncrest customers. If you do have a specific bank question, Suncrest has set up a specific email for you to use, PPP_forgiveness@suncrestbank. So feel free to send those bank specific questions to Suncrest. As far as Haney Biz, as you can see, you know, the time that it can take for this process can be significant. We've talked to multiple customers who have spent, you know, 20 plus hours trying to learn and understand these things. And when we review their application, there still are issues. So we have at Haney Biz put together a affordable flat rate package to help you through the application process and, you know, help you submit the application correctly. So feel free to look at that information on our website. You can certainly email myself directly if you have questions after this webinar. I'd also like to remind you of our dedicated webpage for PPP forgiveness, which you can find at haneybiz.com/PPP-forgiveness, as well as on that page, you'll find these recorded webinars. You'll find tools like a PPP forgiveness checklist and other resources for you. Finally, this is webinar 2 in a series of 3 that we have scheduled. You can see the next scheduled date for webinar 3. So if you registered for this webinar, you'll be registered for that webinar, but please feel free to share our registration link with others. We're happy to help those folks that weren't able to participate. With that said, I'd like to thank all of you for attending. And again, thank you to our panelists, Ian and Alyssa, and to Suncrest Bank. We look forward to connecting with you through these many resources, and we look forward to seeing you again for our next webinar. Until then, goodbye.